see you coming back in here with dirty jerseys. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jerseys.
How could anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Welcome, welcome. It's the so-called Weaker Podcast, our weekly GAA podcast here on bowls.ie. Gavin Cooney here presenting. Mark Farley is here as always. And he's back, Morris Brosnan.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, lads.
Post-controversial statements.
Do you know what happened was, right? I was thinking, as somebody from a county involved this weekend, I was thinking, now that we've had a referee retire, will anybody bother coming and watching at all? And I realised, by the same token, would anybody listen if I wasn't here? So I decided to come back, save the day, and I hope that the same duty expense this weekend as well.
Get in touch with the show. You can tweet at bowls.ie or email the gaffer at bowls.ie. We're looking ahead to the hurling final later on in the show. But we have our pairing for the All-Ireland Football Final of 2018. Tyrone and Dublin are there. Dublin, believe it or not, are there. You, Morris, were at Dublin Galway, if I'm correct.
I was, yeah.
Now, I had been reading all year that Galway were the coming team and they, based on their league performance at least, were in a good position to at least give Dublin a bit of a game. What happened?
I don't know. There was such a weird kind of post narrative about this Galway team. Like, I read the Sun Nino's match report, which described them as the dullest team in the country this year. Which I can't understand that. Like,
Dublin are dull.
I thinking back on that first half, like, the problem with playing a team like Dublin is that you have to take advantage of every aspect. So a certain amount of that is uncontrollable because it's just good fortune. And Galway had two brilliant goal chances. 9 times out of 10, they would score two other goal chances, which is a penalty. And then I watched the game back and I think the camera might have missed this. After Comer's goal, Cluxon mishit his kick out. Another great goal chance there. But that, it broke down. He actually reacted really well to make a save. So like, even when you look at those kind of, like, that's such a, I think oftentimes when you're analysing a game, you hate to put something down to fortune. And those things aren't really like fortune. I mean, you can talk about great goalkeeping or good finishing, but a certain element is just luck. Like, the ultimately, maybe that goal goes in, or maybe the penalty goes in. It has to go in. Because at that point then, Galway are 3 goals to the good. Dublin are down by 9 points. And you're starting to think, Jesus, this is... Like, that was the greatest moments of excitement were those kind of moments when Galway seemed to really threaten. And they did. Like, they did threaten. They kind of took the game to Dublin as well as you can with a team that is this good. Like, I don't know if it's appreciated how this is, this iteration of Dublin, like, everyone talks about post 2014 Donegal, that's the narrative, like, post Donegal, this is when they became this team. Like, this iteration of Dublin is the most intelligent team that I've ever seen. Like, if you look, what they do effectively is they force, not only you're faced with a double bluff, because either teams drop way back and Dublin keep the ball outside it, like, so say Dublin scores, every score in the first half bar one came from within the D, that scoring D that we all talk about. But what Dublin are doing there is they're taking the ball from the 45 in, and it's your choice is either you drop everyone back and then watch them, and they will happily keep the ball for 5, 6, 7 minutes. They do not care anymore. They don't. There's no emphasis on us having to force our hands here. So then eventually, like, that kind of like wills you into submission. You're lulled into this kind of false sense of security that you're lulled back and they'll get a score. Or you try and push up and then they're so good at moving the ball that someone gets in free inside and they get a score off that. Like, it's so hard to stop them going forward, which is what, like, Galway found out. And then even, like, the biggest thing for Galway, by the way, or that game, like, whatever about, like, system attacks, was fatigue. Like, this is, I was looking at this just before I came in here. The Galway team that started on the 27th of January, the 27th of January started this team, is almost identical, exact same team.
Like, really?
Lavelle, Coyne, Sean, Andy, Kernan, Kelly, Bradshaw, Sweeney, that's the back six, exact same team that started this weekend. Midfield was Conroy, he would have started, but he got injured. Cook, who came on, Heaney started, Vardy came on, Brannigan started, Walsh started, Comer started, Sweeney started. The Dublin team from the first game when they played Kildare, Fitzsimons, Byrne, Daly, Small, Basquel, Brogan, Lowndes came on, O'Shea came on, Andrews came on. It's a totally different team. Like, it's, you can, if this is a Galway team that's been on the road for almost 8 months and it's the exact same players, the same kind of small group of players, and that's ultimately what cost them.
Yeah, but while Galway have a level of depth, why did they not rotate at all? Surely they don't have Dublin's depth, but surely they could rotate a bit during the year. And because he seemed to play his full team against Monaghan, a game that didn't really matter, did that catch up with them?
I think the damage was done before the Monaghan game. Like, from Kevin Walsh's perspective, it kind of makes sense. Like, your first year in Division One, you want to hit that running, like you want to hit the ground running. So you throw everything into that and you make sure, like initially, just don't get relegated. And then when you get a run, like a league win, imagine what that would have done for that Galway team. Yeah. And then when your first game of the year is against Mayo, you can't rotate from the strong start yet to league going into that game. So you hit the ground running, then you're in a kind of final, and then you're at the Super 8s. Like there was very limited chance to rest your team. And also the idea that you should have rested everyone for a Monaghan game. Like you rest everyone for a Monaghan game. But if he had won that Monaghan game, you avoid Dublin. And that's ultimately what it was down to, like trying to get away from Dublin. Like that's why you start 13 of the team that are going to start the week of recovery. If you can just avoid Dublin, you would have been in a stronger hand. Like God, I still think Galway would have beaten Tyrone last weekend. I think they're at that level. But it's just the fact that you came up against the Dublin team. And that's what, like there was a moment, I was watching it in the second half. Somebody like Mannion, like what his iteration, like the, Mark, we've spoken of this off air as well about Dublin, are they a defensive team or not? And you can, it's actually yes and no. They actually are, because the amount of players that they pull back and press the ball. But they're actually not as well, because the same players that pull back are fit enough, they get up and attack off the same play. Normally your problem is you've 12 players back and you've 3 figures forward and maybe 2 can make the break. Dublin have 5 or 6 that can make, like Mannion can come back, track and puts in a massive tackle. The ball gets turned over for Conroy, and then he's the one who ends up on the other side of the pitch and ends up scoring. Like they're the guys who can actually carry that. Like they're, whatever, but like we all talk about the ability and their strength and conditioning is miles ahead of everyone as well.
Yeah. So is their accuracy.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of different things that I noticed from the game as well on Saturday evening. And there was Galway were well in that game. They had, like, it looks like it was a hammer. And it seemed to be from everyone at home was talking about that it was really dead and everything on television. It didn't seem like it was an All-Ireland semi-final at all. But
I watched on TV, I didn't. I thought there was
a decent atmosphere at, like, for a long period, especially that round that time when Galway got the goal chance straight and then got the penalty. But if you think of attack in three different ways, say you've got your fast break attack from when you win a turnover, maybe in defence, or you take a quick kick out or something like that. You've got the attack where you're kind of going up the field at the same time as someone, maybe you win a Dublin kick out or something like that. You know, all team, like Dublin are tracking back and Galway are going back at the same time as them or slightly after them. And then you've got the attack when Dublin have all their players back and you're just playing around in front of the blanket. Like Galway did really well in the general sort of open. We're all kind of like Shane Walsh is in a race with someone from Dublin and he's soloing the ball and he pops it over the bar and Galway get a point from it. But like their attack when Dublin got all the players back was terrible. And their attack when they were fast breaking, it was what we talked about before in the podcast, was really bad in that they were soloing the ball from their own 21 up to the opposition 45 before trying to do anything with it, or like maybe one or two short hand passes. And it was that thing we talked about before, thinking of like speed of transition and that you think you're being really fast on the counter attack by running really quickly with the ball. Whereas if you just got the ball, looked, put your head up and seen Damien Comer and Ian Burke inside crying out for a long ball in. And the only time they actually did it, Comer got the goal from it. Mm. And they were like, it was on so many times in the first half. And they didn't try it again until injury time in the first half. Sean Armstrong was coming up, saw the ball was on inside and got so excited that he fell over.
Yeah.
And then had to pass it back out. But there were two big moments even in the second half of that where Galway took a long kick out. One of them kick outs that, you know, was kind of the half forward line, come back deep, wheel around and then it's played, Lavelle played it into the space over them. And I can't remember who it was, but he ran on to the kick. It might have been Walsh, because it was right around the right-hand half-forward position. Ran on to the kick out, caught it. And again, it was like quick. The ball is on inside because Dublin were dropping back sweepers in front of the lads or dropping back players, maybe not sweepers, but all that before the defence was back. And ball wasn't given in. Kept soloing on. So that was the first mistake. Then they won a free and Ian Burke had made a run and he kept making the run for the free. And it wasn't given. They weren't reacting quick enough to give it to him. So he eventually was given the free, but it was one of them where like he started on the 21-yard line and ended up winning the ball out around the 45 out along the sideline. And possession was just wasted. Whereas if the ball had been given to him quicker, originally before the free was given, but even at the free time, it would have been a scoring chance. Then there was another time when Dublin kept the ball for a few minutes and Ciarán Kilkenny ended up popping the ball over from straight in front of the goals. Galway went up and it was the exact same situation. They got Dublin all their players back. It was almost like a mirror image of the attack previously, except that in the end, latter end, like they held it for about 30 seconds, grew impatient, and Ian Burke went for a shot and sliced it straight up in there, didn't even go out of play. And that's the difference. If you look at like the stats we've been provided by Shore, the official statistics partner of the GAA, they had all the stats of both games. And if you look at Dublin converted 20 out of the score of the 30 scoring chances they got from play. Galway only converted 11 out of 22. So they were 50%. Dublin were 60%. And even Galway were good compared to the other two teams on Sunday. But like Dublin have gotten so like robotic in their attacks. Like I was just thinking after the game, I was like, what are they going to do when, like, we were interviewing Bernard Brogan for a different show last week, Bernard Brogan Sr. And, like, you're looking at his goal in the 70s. There's loads of these clips. There's the Seamus Darby goal. I suppose that wasn't an amazing piece of skill, but it was just a famous moment. Yeah, exactly. But, like, there's somebody, you know, you think of Galway in 1998 and you're thinking Michael Donlan and his runs up and you've got... Yeah, apparently, by popular vote. Mulligan scoring a goal against Dublin. All these things. What clip do you pick out from this Dublin team that's going to probably win the 2018 All-Ireland final?
That's interesting, actually.
There's literally nothing, because they will not take a shot unless it's on. And even if it's on for them, if they're after making the run, they won't have, with the ball, they won't take the shot. Kevin McManaman came on, ran by everyone time and time again. And then when the shot was on, he just hand passed it off to someone else because he's like, I've exerted a little bit of energy here and I don't trust my my energy levels to pop this over the bar. I'm going to give it to someone else.
It is extreme efficiency over any kind of flamboyance.
It's unbelievable.
So can I bring it back to something you said earlier on where you said Dublin are dull? Are you talking about that in the context of the fact that they're going to win in All-Ireland and they'll beat everyone in front of them by at least 5 or 6 points? Or is it that their style of play is dull?
Well, their style of play. And okay. I don't mean that they're boring defensive or anything. It's just like they're so efficient that you just know what's going to happen. It's like Kevin McManaman, like when he was come on originally, remember when he scored that goal against Kerry and it was like, it was so good. But you're like, was he going for a point? Was he going for a goal? Like those kind of moments, they don't really happen apart from like the Paul Flynnman for one hit the crossbar, I think, at the end. That was about it. And his goal is both last against Roscommon.
Yeah.
But so apart from Flynn, it seems to be everyone else is just get the ball, hand pass it off, and pop it over the bar. But like there's no freeze from the sideline. Like we need Jeremy Connolly back so he can miss a sideline from 70 yards out.
That fundamentally is like it's so. It's the be all and end all of games. Like when if you were looking at any analyst will tell you this, like turnovers are so vital. Like if you watch the Monaghan game, the amount of costly turnovers you get, and Dublin don't afford teams turnovers by doing that. So they don't. Yeah. Like how many times have you seen Galway's all their points were coming from like a kick out or a stop start play? It was never hitting Dublin quickly on a break because Dublin there was two turnovers in the first half. Like and there were two biggest cheers on the ground. One was when McCarthy drove straight into Sean Andy. He got pulled for charging. And the other one was Flynn and Mannion. There was a big collision. And there was like a big kind of everyone was like, whoa, this thing. And Galway went up and actually scored off that. But other than that, Dublin don't afford you that chance. And because that's basic maths. If we don't afford turnovers and we convert our chances, we will win every single game. We don't give turnovers. And they apply that to every facet of the game. Like even their in-game management. Like you were speaking about... This thing about, you know, why did Galway not use Comer more? Like, the very first ball they did, and he turned and his left and kicked it wide. And then Dublin straight away. I was watching, for some, whatever reason it happens, Sherlock seems to do most of the kind of delivering of, gesturing anyway, and Gavin stands by him. And Sherlock got up and straight away they swapped Keane O'Sullivan off him. So they brought Keane O'Sullivan onto him. Philly was on him for that, Philly McMahon. And Keane O'Sullivan went onto him. And then it was after the goal that the goal again was Philly McMahon and it was Niall Scully, the two of them beside Comer. And straight away, Dublin recognised that. Keane O'Sullivan went on to him. He was totally quiet for 20 minutes and Keane O'Sullivan got injured. So like because Keane O'Sullivan's feeling, you're not going to beat him out there. So that's when you try and get it out on front as opposed to putting it on top of the air. Like the Dublin's in-game management, they got those matches like swapping Merchant out. Eventually, Walsh is giving him a clean and so Smalls goes on him. And the other thing
was... like Michael Fitzsimons came on and when you can bring on Michael Fitzsimons who definitely improved the team because Ian Burke probably got a kick of it in the second half when he went on to him. But even again, and look at the other thing that just I'm looking at the Shore stats here, they won 21 of their 23 kickouts. Galway won 25 out of 31, which wasn't bad.
But Dublin gave up a lot of them.
They were very good Galway though, to be fair, with Flynn getting around Flynn and winning breaks. I felt like Lavelle couldn't, like Dublin were very good at pushing up, not leaving the, you could see every time Lavelle was trying for a short kick out or a quick kick out to the wings and he'd end up just putting his two hands up in the air. And like, it's one of them things actually as well. It's like, so many teams come up with these mad codes for like what they're trying to do with a kick out. And Lavelle just has the two hands straight up in the air going, this one's going up, lads. Everyone in the crowd knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, so
but you might as well let everybody know, because like, it's going to hang in the air for ages.
With two midfielders on the same side, he puts two hands up, the two midfielders on the same side. And then you see like this basketball kind of move where everyone else is kind of holding, like sometimes literally holding somebody off while they're just trying to get, because Flynn, 9 times out of 10, he'd field ball high. So oftentimes they're trying to get Flynn away from fencing and just put him up in the air.
I was laughing as well. No Michael Darren McCauley this week, but the exact same thing with the throw up. I was there at the Garford of the game. I was like, watch this now. Here's James McCarthy in front of Brian Fenton. He's not going for that throw up. And neither is the lad. Who was it? Was it Duggan?
Duggan was there as well.
Duggan was at the front. It's like, neither Duggan nor James McCarthy are going to go for this throw up. And two boys, minute the ball, referee blows the whistle, two lads just start holding each other or just standing there. They might as well be at home.
What's the maddest kick out call that you've heard or have had?
Oh, I can't. I'm not at liberty to discuss that.
Oh, really?
No.
Well, in case Arva are listening in and all.
In case Arva, whoever it is.
We used to like turn the O'Neill. Now, this, I'm going back to under 12s, under 14s football, but when I was at my peak, we used to turn the O'Neill's logo. So it was going to the left. It was going to the left.
Ah, we've gone. But, actually, I had one of them.
Shite eyesight. I couldn't see anyway.
We had one last year we were using. What was it? It was either Greek or Roman. Phrases, but go whatever way it was the wrong way around. I remember, like, someone taking the piss out of someone going, it's Greek, look it up. And I was like, I'm pretty sure, no, it's Roman, it's Latin, that's it, look it up. It's like, pretty sure that's Greek.
Pascal Lam was dropping the Latin on Sunday game afterwards, the Veni, Vidi, Vici, which means, like, even Spillane's Latin references are tired at this stage. Are we all getting a bit tired of Dublin's dominance? Because there was 54,717 people at this game. That was the lowest for a semi-final featuring Dublin since 95. And that back then, that was the capacity at Croke Park because they were doing it up. Like, there's plenty of reasons why people couldn't go to this. There's loads of games on, especially Galway fans have had Super 8s along with Leinster final replay, semi-final replay and all that. But for that game, like, all of the other semi-finals under Jim Gavin have exceeded 80,000. So, like, it does appear that Dublin fans aren't turning up to this. Why?
There's a minigame in certain kinds of, like, the first, like, Galway football fans, any football fan, they're traditionally very, very poor. Like, you get one home championship game in the entire year and you get outcrowded 70% to 30% by Monaghan fans. Like, they're just traditionally weak. Like, that's not a slight on the fans that do turn up, they're brilliant, but just the support in general is pretty weak. The Saturday evening is kind of a weird one. I think the price of games is unbelievable. Like, you're talking about after 3 Super 8 games, especially for Galway fans, 3 Super 8 games, then the hurling, and then 45 quid again for a semi-final. Like, it's tough going on pockets. There's also, like, the biggest thing is, it's nothing new to see one poorly attended semi-final. Like, if you go through, last year was Mayo-Kerry, that was 53,000. Mayo-Tip, 53,000. Kerry-Tyrone, 53,000. Kerry-Mayo, 53,000. The problem is that it's generally never involving Dublin. Like, that's the kind of weird one. It's like, it does feel like there's a, like, that sense of inevitability, it's counterintuitive to sport when you feel like this is so predictable. And that, I think that has, whether or not they would admit it, transcended two Dublin fans.
Yeah. But I mean, the GA's business model is based on attendances, and a massive bulk of that is Dublin fans selling at Croke Park. So if that stops happening.
Yeah. That's the one.
I mean, then you're in take action territory. Yeah. But what action can they take? They can't realistically split Dublin.
No, and like anything you do, we've talked about making football more interesting, like, you know, hand pass limits, having to kick the ball in, not being able to go back into your own half. None of that is going to stop Dublin winning on Ireland. They'll adapt to that better than anyone.
Unless maybe you could give Mayo a bye to the final.
Which that's about it.
Some people in this podcast, I do think, might be in favour.
There's two separate issues. One is the strength of Dublin and the other is the standard of football on the fair. That's not Dublin's fault. Like, this quality of, like, Galway, Kerry, or a lot of those Super games, that's not always Dublin's fault. Like, there's an issue with certain elements of football that needs tweaking. But there's two kind of separate, very clear issues that the GA know they need to tackle.
Yeah,
and like Ulster finals were near sellouts back in the mid 2000s in Croke Park, and you had even less at Monaghan Tyrone on Sunday than you had on Saturday. So it's not just, you know, like back in the heyday, you would have had a near sellout for Monaghan and Tyrone, you'd imagine.
Yeah, troubling times, Monaghan Tyrone. I'll hold my hands up here and say I didn't exactly watch this properly because I was watching Arsenal against Man City instead. But looking on, it appears that Monaghan were horsed by the referee. Like, was that the deciding factor?
No.
Or is there Monaghan, more to it?
Monaghan played at about 60% of their potential.
Okay.
If even. And Tyrone weren't much higher. It was like, there was littered with mistakes. But Monaghan were making, like, it's one of those things of the occasion, I think, definitely getting to them. It had to be. I can't understand anything. Maybe it is fatigue as well. Like, I mean, they put in a massive performance against Galway, and they're the exact same as Galway in terms of the amount of games they've gone through and the mileage that are on those players. But, like, little things that were barely even noticeable, like, you know, when you're like in front of the blanket and you're just hand passing the ball across to someone, like, say, Carroll O'Connell come running on, and he'd go to collect the ball as it was happening, and he'd just drop it and then have to pick it up again. And it was just like a split second thing, but it was just like, this keeps happening. Like, there was another time Vinnie Corey was put through in the second half along the end line, just didn't hold the ball. There was loads of times when there were just little drops, and there was even just the, like you were saying about luck and fortune. There's another one in the first half where the ball was played into Conor McManus from Carroll O'Connell. He couldn't collect it. Then it came to O'Connell. O'Connell's running by him off his shoulder. O'Connell tried to grab it. He couldn't grab it. But if he had left it, McManus would have been able to get it again, on the turn, yeah, again. But his little touch took it away from McManus the second time. You're like, oh, Jesus. Like, just little things like that that just seemed, it just, the ball literally just seemed to be like a hot potato sometimes with them. And then Tyrone just couldn't, like, they did everything but put the ball over the bar a lot of the time.
Yeah, like, I actually went to that game as well and had, like, surprisingly way more crack at that game than I had to do before. Like, it was, like, it was mental. Like, I'm already planning the Ulster final next year because it was absolutely mad. I was walking into the grounds with a friend of mine, and a bus full of Tyrone fans pulled up beside us. And the door is wide open because there's so many people wedged in it. There was people standing in the aisles, just packed with Tyrone fans coming in. Then I went into the hill, and the same group of Tyrone fans were coming in behind me. And they were well outnumbered now in the hill between Monaghan fans. So then when Monaghan started to attack, they started to the Tyrone fans, as Monaghan attacked, started chanting, "Go on, Carlo," because this kind of slight on A, Carlo, weirdly, and also on Monaghan.
And then Carlo.
The worst part of the Tyrone fans chanting, "Go on, Carlo," at Monaghan was how offended the Monaghan fans got by it. Like, I don't know what that means for Carlo. I
hope that Sean Gannon still listens to the show now and is offended by that.
The game itself, though, like, this, the first half was a 2-point hammering, for want of a better. Yeah. It's like, Tyrone were better in so many ways, and yet their conversion, we touched off earlier, it was so poor. Like, that would be your biggest concern going into the game against Dublin, that if you don't use those chances, like, they were all over.
Just to put some figures to that again, sure, provided with these stats, we've got we said Dublin created 30 scoring chances from play and took 20 on Sunday. Tyrone created 26, so just 4 short of Dublin, but they only converted 10.
Oh my, even Monaghan, 8 from 23.
Yeah,
8.
Like 8 points from play.
The
finish was very bad. And even like a lot of like the Tyrone did so much right. They went into the game with this kind of different setup of playing with 4 forwards, and that really spooked Monaghan. Like, initially, Vinnie Corey was in full forward line, and then they swapped him out. But like, they kind of didn't account for the fact that Tyrone were actually kind of trying to overload their own forwards and try to maybe, like, Monaghan went into that game as a moving as a sitting target, and Tyrone were a lot more adaptable. And that would be some source of encouragement going forward in terms of for Dublin. But you're going back to those, like, that kind of fundamental element of, like, how effective do you use your possession when you get a turnover, which Tyrone did again and again in that game. Like, the amount of times Monaghan ran into moving targets, and you get, oftentimes it's McKernan. He might be a tad underappreciated because they run into a body of Tyrone players, and one Tyrone player just gets his hand in and knocks it away. And more often than not, it's McKernan who's doing that. And then Tyrone go up the field and end up kicking it wide or dropping 6 balls into the goalkeeper's hands in the first half. Like, see, that's unbelievably poor finishing. And that does not bode well against a team like Dublin. That's something that you would either be far more patient with possession, which they were as well. It was just like that kind of lack of one. Like, the two facets that Tyrone were bad in is the reason that they almost lost the game, if not for Sutton's goal. And that was that. And then also in the second half, the amount of frees they gave away. Like, you keep a team in, McManus scored 6 frees, I think. Began definitely kicked one. Like, that, you just let teams back into games by doing that kind of stuff.
So what do Tyrone do? I mean, are we giving them any chance against Dublin? So,
like, they've got probably one of the most tactically astute managers in the country, and that has to bode well because the amount of deep sitting. I genuinely believe if a team is ever going to beat this dumb team, you would have to be preparing for a year, which maybe Mayo were doing. Like, you have to
invest
everything into that one-off performance, and that's what you're building towards. Now, Tyrone clearly haven't done that because you're coming off a qualifier run like they were, and every day you're fighting for your life. But like it's funny that there's an interview done with Mickey Hart in the Irish Times in January with Keith Duggan, which was brilliant. But it was the first time in a long time that Mickey Hart has actually gone into the tactical elements of his games. And he, like, for example, Galway systematically didn't really break down. It was more fatigue. Like, fatigue, that was ultimately, they couldn't keep it runners and they couldn't move up the field as quickly in the second half. That's where they lost the game, the primary reason. But when Tyrone played Dublin, it was a systematic failure. And he goes into that. He explains what happened, like, when Hampsey went to attack. Generally, a man was supposed to fill in behind, so you're filling for every man. One goes forward, one goes back. You fill, every man is accounted for if the ball breaks down. It didn't happen there. Conor got his early goal against Tyrone, and that's where it all broke down. So he understands systematically what went wrong and how he would have to prepare that for Dublin. But that's all theory. The problem in terms of correcting that is that you need the characters to do that. Like, you need all that theory is no good if you can't have the people who are going to execute it and practice it.
The accusation last year was that it was too rigid, because I remember in the same interview, Mickey Hart explained Conn O'Callaghan getting his goal because Conn didn't actually track back
his man. He didn't. Yeah, he exactly. Up.
So, like, that's Mickey Hart's game plan works if the opposition play as he would expect them to and ideally want them to. But Dublin won't do that. I mean, while they're rigid and they're adaptable as well, they can improvise, for want of a better phrase, on field as the game is ongoing. So if Hart does set up Tyrone in such a way, is it not going to be too rigid, and Dublin will spot it within 5 or 10 minutes? This is their great genius under Gavin and Jason Sherlock, is that they'll tweak whatever they need to tweak if the player's on the bench, if it even comes to that. So is there any way that Mickey Hart can set up that is more adaptable than he did last year? Has he shown that this year at all?
He has. Like, they're not... Tyrone are 100% not as defensive as they were last year. There's no question about it. They're trying to leave at least three forwards up. Sometimes they had four forwards up. At all times, it was definitely two. Like, there's more elements that they're kind of going more man-on-man. Cullum Kavanagh is still dropping off, but he's not... Oftentimes, Cullum Kavanagh was sweeping in and around the edge of the D. He wasn't back in front of... they left Hampsey for portions of that game one-on-one with McManus. That would never have happened under Mickey Hart before. He would have been double-teamed for the entire game. The problem with that is that you're trying to push up on a Dublin team that even when you filter men back, they won't... This Dublin team aren't going to afford you those turnovers, which is like oxygen to this Tyrone team. That's what you saw against Monaghan. They thrive off that. And then, say Tyrone have got these kind of, what would you call them? Sherpas who will, carry the ball forward from a defence to attack, and that will, instigate something up there. Dublin have players who, the very first score they scored, Jack McCaffrey, who gets a ball and delivers an unbelievable kick pass to Mannion, who skins Kernan, and that's a point. Dublin have a way quicker transition and don't afford the turnover that you need. You're trying to account for 10 different crucial aspects of a game, and that's why it's so hard, because also, that's a great point. While we talked about Dublin being dull, they're adaptable. There's different elements of this Dublin team. The Dublin team, this wasn't the same Dublin game plan that they used against Donegal, where they kept ball for the last 15 minutes and kind of let the game win out. This was a Dublin team that was we're going to go out for it. They probably could have had another goal, conceded a sloppy goal, because they so overcommitted. But it's this was a, there's different elements to this Dublin team.
Probably the biggest different element, Mark, is the fact that they have better players in all positions. And I'm actually talking about a second string team there.
Exactly, yeah. There's two things there. One thing I just wanted to mention there was the Conor Callaghan thing of not following the man back. I hate these people. Did you ever notice that?
Hold on. He's kept the hottest take of all for the end of the year.
No, it's just typical.
These people are Mickey Hart.
No. Just these people who get away with not following. It happens an awful lot. If you're playing around the middle of the field or whatever, and you go forward and the move will break down or something happened where you're I was straight through and goal there if that had to come to me or whatever. And the move will break down, you'll turn around, and your man hasn't bothered tracking you back, and he's up the other end of the field. And if you did the same thing, honestly, you track back 100 times a game, and you don't do it once, and sure enough, they'll end up putting the ball in the net.
Yeah.
It's so...
might end up young player of the year,
Mark. That's one of those things where it proves that those energy systems or the positive thinking or whatever the hell they call the secret... That all those fields, those mad people, they're right. They're things that just seem
if you
to,
think it,
good fortune just
happen.
Seems to attract itself to some people. And it's definitely not me. Anyway, sorry. The second double team, that's the other thing I was thinking, is that if Mickey Hart gets it tactically spot on to go into this game, the problem is the Dublin can just bring on a load of lads and completely blow you out of the water, which is another thing of what they did on Saturday evening. I mean, some of the lads that brought on were absolutely brilliant.
You have a full 15,
right? Look at this for a team.
Okay,
right?
Here we go.
Coverford and goals. a full back line of Davy Byrne, Michael Fitzsimons, and Eric Lowndes. You'll find it hard to find a better full back line in the entire country.
He sounded like Jerry Cunningham in Spanish football.
Lowndes. Half back line, Conor Mullally, Sean McMahon, Darren Daly. Possibly the weakest line in this team, but not because of ability, just because of the fact that they haven't.
Know them.
No, you know, they're young. Daly isn't, but McMahon and Mullally are young. They've got a couple of 121 titles to their name, and they'd probably be shoe ins to any other half back line in the country. But just because of the fact you've got the likes of John Small, James McCarthy, Jack McCaffrey, who else have we got in there now? We've got Brian Howard, you've got Killian O'Sullivan, obviously, was playing, or Keane O'Sullivan was playing halfback for a while. They've got about 45 halfbacks. They've got so many halfbacks that they play them midfield, fullback, and in the half forward line in the first team. Then midfield, you've got Paul Flynn and Michael Darren McCauley. Then you've got a front six of, and this is the first person on this is someone who we actually forgot about until the very end, Jermyn Connolly, Kevin McMenamin, Cormac Costello. And then you've got a full forward line. I'm going to give you two sets of full forward
all
lines.
All three of them have turned an All-Ireland final.
Yeah.
Mad stuff.
You've also got Michael Darren McCauley there, who's a player, former player of the year.
Yeah.
Paul Flynn, who was the favourite for player of the year every year there for about 7 years. And Jermyn Connolly, who was possibly the best footballer.
Connolly shouldn't be in that. He's not available this year.
Right, if Connolly's not available, that's grand. I'm going to give you six people to choose from. Perfect. For the full forward line, and also to replace Jermyn Connolly if you want. Our starting full forward line we have here at the minute is Colin Basquell, Paddy Andrews, and Bernard Brogan. But if you don't like that, you could start Conor McHugh, Owen O'Gara, and Mark Shute. So, like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh, it's scary. Like, it is scary. There's a certain element of, like, it's often said, like, Comer's Galway's best forward, Walsh is his second best forward. Their third best forward is currently in Australia because Kenny McDad just signed the contract with the AFL. So he was unbelievable in 21s, but didn't get the chance to kick on. That applies to, like, we all know stories like that from every country. Jamie Clark this year for Armagh. Like, would Armagh have beaten Roscommon if Clark was for that game? Probably. So they're probably in a super race then. But the fact that it's so comprehensive, like, isn't it, we're not talking about one player. It's not about Jermyn Connolly. It's about 15, like, it's a, or more. Like,
it's 18 there. Yeah. Like, there's 18 people on that list, and there's probably a lot more. Like, there's even Kieran Redden or whoever that you could throw in there too.
Yeah, all those stats.
Emmett O'Congila as well, who has I think at least 3 All-Irelands now, and I don't know if he's played a minute of Championship football.
All those stats you heard can't come to us from Sure, the official statistics partner of the GAA.
It's back once again by a Noel McGrath. Back once again, it comes here to the number 2. Back once again to Conor Loftus. Once again through one marker to another. But back once again. Back once again there to Brian Stack. One back once again here. Back once again to Philly McMahon this time. There's a chance for Mayo now just to build it from the back once again. Back once again towards back once again. Back once again. Back once again.
Now I'm looking at my notes here. It says Mark's got crazy undying man love for John Myler.
I don't know if I go that far.
Okay.
I was thinking at the weekend.
I'll rein it in. So,
do you have to be? Are you really a top level GAA manager if you don't tuck your t-shirt, your county t-shirt, into your O'Neill's t-shirt, into your trousers? So usually it's tracksuit bottoms. Actually, it said tracksuit bottoms, and it would apply to every single GAA manager in the country, except for John Myler, because John Myler wears your O'Neill's t-shirt, slacks, and shoes, which is thoroughly enjoyable. And I'm just wondering, is this the first sign of the steps we're taking to go back to GAA managers wearing suits on the sideline?
You say go back.
Go back. Yes, okay. Well, if you take Mick O'Dwyer, for instance, who is the man who I think is the pioneer of GAA fashion, he started out when he was managing Kerry in the 70s. He had a full suit. He'd wear a full suit out regularly. Then he went to sort of a shirt and a V-neck jumper and slacks, which is what Kevin Heffernan would have worn as well. And then I can't think of anyone that symbolises the t-shirt tucked into the tracksuit bottoms more than Mick O'Dwyer. Mick O'Dwyer got Kildare to win All-Ireland, and I think with every match he played in 98, his tracksuit bottoms, the waistline went higher and higher and higher, to the fact that he was wearing the tracksuit bottoms under his oxers and the t-shirt was just from the neck up.
Normally that kind of, it doesn't that symbolise in the Premier League anyway, like the it foreshadows chaos. Like, you get somebody like Conte who rocks up in suits for 2 years and then he starts wearing a tracksuit, and now we all start guessing, oh, they're in trouble now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
sure enough, the third season becomes to disaster.
Or if you're completely mental, it's the wearing a suit to the grounds, then changing your clothes and into a tracksuit and then back into a suit, which is most famously done that Neil Warnock's doing at the minute, but also by Tony Pulis. And let's not forget that Tony Pulis had a run-in with James Beattie in the showers after one of the games for Stoke. And if that man was wearing the same set of clothes the entire day, he wouldn't have been in the showers in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he wasn't wearing anything in the shower.
I know, but it was, maybe he was like, I've changed my clothes, I might as well have a shower
now. Just to give you the image of that story, that'll linger longest in your mind. So, I mean, if we're going back now, if you think that John Myler is the first step back on this full circle to the suit-wearing coach or manager, who's going to be the first
to go back to the suit?
Yeah. Is it Myler? I don't think so.
No, it's probably going to be, who's the most
likely? I know who it will be.
Oh, go on.
Now, the slight caveat is that he's not yet a manager or coach, but if he does it, James McGrath.
Yeah.
And to the extent where he might even have a bow tie.
James McGrath might come back to referee intercounty in a suit.
In a three-piece suit, yeah.
I think the most likely to wear a suit, in my eyes, would be Jim McGuinness. If he does come back, he's going to bring back that. The influence of soccer obviously played a big role. And I just feel that, like, after being comfortable, maybe even Peter Canavan, the boys up in the Sky Sports studio love a good suit. And, like, maybe they've gotten used to it and go, you know what, I'm going to stick with this.
Yeah, maybe. Morris, have you any thoughts on this important element of GA?
I think, like, the new generation of manager, or even the old generation, won't subscribe to your suit theory. Like, I think when Jack O'Connor inevitably becomes Kerry manager, I don't know if the man even owns a suit. Stephen Rochford, he's not going to wear a suit. I don't see the powerhouses certainly won't elect for that option anyway.
You were fucked over the line twice. Fucked over the line like you'd catch a fucking loaf of bread and fucked you over the line with his shorts up. And what that does is it lifts the opposition. We don't want to see no Westmeath man fucked about. Is that clear now, Alan? No more.
Now, I made the editorial decision to bring the final side of the show in a bold new direction because Guess the Spreads has been renamed Guess the Spread. Now, the All-Ireland
Dairy Gold
hurling final preview. Galway against Limerick, there is a spread and it must be guessed. And Morris gets to go first on the basis that I've preferred his contributions to the podcast thus far. To be honest, Mark, not even close.
I've spoken to my friends and my family and there's a general feeling around that my contributions were greater.
You should have got first choice for the spread. I was definitely in the running. Are Galway favourites for this?
Of course they are. Wait, no. Maybe it's Limerick.
Sorry, listeners, if you didn't get that wink there, he absolutely believes that and then decided to engage in a bit of reverse psychology near the end.
Oh, yes, they have to be because they're defending terms, but I don't know.
Could, like, be Clare.
They've got it. I'm going to say Galway minus two.
Okay, over to Ireland.
I think it's more, so I'm going to go with just Galway minus three, play it safe.
Okay, Galway minus two.
It is Galway minus two. Ah, oh, Christ. So that's the end of the game.
That's it over, yeah.
Well, I won.
Yeah.
Morris, how are Galway going to win this, though?
That's a good question. Like, the...
Do they have to reverse civilization? And how is it the hurlers can have no problem with, like, intensity?
The issue with Galway is, I was thinking about this, with the same issue as the issue Monaghan had. It's that their game plan, their starting team, are all predictable. Like, you've got an entirely predictable... Every aspect of them is predictable, and because of that you become like this moving target. Like, the ultimately, if you were to watch back every Galway game from the very first day against Kilkenny when they drew the Leinster final to the replay when the way Kilkenny came back into the game, like, you understand what you need to target. It's only about execution. It's not like we're talking about Mickey Hart has got 10 different aspects where he's like, what do we need to implement for this to happen? And Limerick know what they need to implement. Like, Kylie knows this, Paul knows this. Like, they're painfully aware of what they do. The only problem then is that, do you have the personnel to execute it? But in terms of, like, who do you match up against with Joe? Like, you know he's going to drift out the field. You need to press somebody up on him. So is Hannon the man to do that? Or is he somebody you need to hold the centre? And then you actually swap somebody else onto him. Same thing with their inside forwards. Like, Whelan, are you going to go on Finn or is he going to go on English? If you do put him on that when he comes out the field, who goes to follow him? But again, that's like there's this basic element that you know that you need to do. Then you also know that you've got a stronger bench, so that if you can be within touching distance by the, you know, negating those aspects after 50 minutes, you've got somebody like Dowling and Casey to come on, which, and Galway's bench this year, it's been shown up for being slightly weaker than Limerick. It's not that those hurlers aren't incredibly capable, but it's just that basic aspect of, but like, that's Galway's, the biggest fear you would have for Galway, and I'm speaking like slightly biased here because like, you would be slightly fearful for Galway, is that the, in terms of what you do to beat them, it's actually like, if somebody as kind of simple as myself can understand that, then Limerick certainly know that. And then, and also like, Micheál Donoghue is aware of that. Like, there, he's aware that there is a lack of kind of, you know, versatility in certain elements of their game. And I'm sure he's, you know, he's working towards fixing that. But also there is the, like, you eventually just have to back yourself that our game plan is strong enough, as is shown this year. Like, as Joe said after the game, like, we weren't behind. Like, this idea that we didn't, you know, close out the game, we weren't behind. Like, what Galway would have to do is fully commit to the same game plan that they have all year, which is, you know, incredibly physical, hard-working for forward line, a lot of players out the field, you know, this tenacious tackling, and ultimately that'll be enough, you hope, to overcome a team like Limerick.
Mm. Mark, what's the big tactical question of this?
Do you start Shane Dowling?
No. I love him, and he's one of my favourite hurlers. I think he was unbelievable the weekend, but who, like, if you start Shane Dowling, you're taking out a player. Like, well, Shane Dowling tried because when he came on, the Cork's backs were wrecked, and Cork's backs were wrecked and come because Jalan, Mulcahy, Morrissey, the amount of movement they do is unbelievable. Like, it kind of weird seems out. Like, there's no, Dublin are evidence of this as well, by the way, there's no shame anymore in being an impact sub. Like, that's, if like a player like Kevin McMenamin can totally buy into it and totally implement that and come off the bench. And like, Kevin McMenamin is so selfish. Not only does he accept his role as an impact sub, he accepts
I'm sure you don't mean he's really selfish.
Kevin McMenamin is so unselfish that he can accept his role. Not only does he accept his role as a sub, he'll accept his role as coming on as a sub, getting the ball, breaking forward, running past four Galway players, and then laying it off to Cormac Costello to take the point, because he's, even though he could probably pop it over himself. Like, that's kind of where you would hope. And a player like Dowling doesn't need to do that because he's a finisher, but I don't think they will start him either.
Mm. And in terms of Galway selection, maybe I guess Johnny Glynn has to start.
I wouldn't predict any massive change. I think if McInerney will probably come back in, that means Burke probably goes out and Glynn probably goes on the wing. But other than that, it's like predictable. Like, the Irish Times have published a probable team today. That would never happen with Galway teams of old, because you have five or six changes that might come in. That's not going to, like, this Galway team is like predictable. Like, doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. Like, the you know, a lot of great teams were predictable, but it's just how you counter that. But they're it's that kind of slight one dimension.
Yeah.
You mentioned one thing there as well, just go back to football for a second, was Mick had a mad idea. You're talking about players not having to, you know, that there's no shame in being a sub anymore. Do you think there is the possibility, well, there isn't the possibility, it's not going to happen, but do you think it should happen that a sub might actually win an All-Star? Like, is Cormac Costello deserving of an All-Star if he has another fantastic performance in the final when he comes on? Because he's come on and dominated games as a substitute. He's dominated at the closers, or whatever they call it in rugby.
Finishers.
He's one of the best finishers in the game.
Yeah, yeah, but is it, like, how in context do you want to take that? Like, is he dominant in games because, you know, somebody like Sean Coyne is after spending 60 minutes running after Mannion or Conor Callaghan, and then he's coming out like
if Shane Dowling wins the All-Ireland for Limerick, like, if he comes on and does what he did in the semi-final, he'll be the most influential player.
I actually agree with you.
Yeah.
I've only played 20 minutes, or not counting extra time. Like, because it is a strange one now these days.
But it's one of the fatal flaws with the All-Stars as well. Like, we were, myself and PJ were speaking in the office before this about trying to pick the football All-Stars, and it's like, Cullum Kavanagh is evidently deserves to be in it because of what he's done all year. But a player like Niall Kearns has been, like, if it was the top 15 footballers in the country, Niall Kearns would be in it. He would, like, he just evidently would. But there's no role for him if you're picking two midfielders. Fenton has to be there, and Cullen McAvoy now has to be there.
It was the weird thing this weekend. We were saying that Kearns had his best performance of the championship, but got kicked out of the All-Stars for Cullen.
And there's no question he's been in the top 15 players this year, but just because maybe it's the All-Stars that need to change. Like, do we certainly need to All-Star sweepers and All-Star substitutions?
Yeah, selection kit mainly needs
double sweeper in the All-Star team. What we need to do is change the All-Stars to the PwC definitive rankings of the top 15 GAA players of the last year. Upvote on Playbuzz.
do we really want to give up that kind of sweet online content?
Possibly not.
To RTE? Don't think we do. One word prediction to the All-Ireland Hurling Final. Mark, you get to go first here.
Limerick.
Galway.
Galway, cool. We're going to have a proper All-Ireland Hurling Final preview. Not that that wasn't proper, but it'll be longer with fewer non-hurling folk here.
So it's just myself and Gavin doing it.
Yeah. No, if you heard earlier on the show, I have now apparently renounced GAA in favour of the true national sport that is the English Premier League. That'll appear in this podcast feed later on this week. Probably won't call the so-called Weekly Podcast, though. It will be under a different and generic name. Do get in touch with the show. Tweet at bulls.ie. Email the gaffer at bulls.ie. Thanks very much to Mark and Morris.
Thanks, Kev.
Thanks very much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the so-called Weekly Podcast on iTunes. You'll find it by just searching bulls.ie. Leave a review, a rating, tell your friends, or share it on social media and tell everyone who's following the digital approximation of yourself. That way we get to see the praise and it makes us feel much better about ourselves. Until next week, or the bonus hurling pod coming up later this week, take it easy.